Thank you for joining us today. My name is Naveen and my co-presenter is Thomas. We are a contributor to the Apache MXNet project. We're going to talk about the projects, open source projects in motion around MXNet. It's not just one project. It's an ecosystem that we are trying to build that helps you to build a pipeline from building, training a model to all the way to deployment. A little bit of background. MXNet was originally created by academia from, these were PhD students from Carnegie Mellon and University of Washington. And then in 2016, November, Amazon chose this as a deep learning framework of choice. In 2017, January, the project was accepted into Apache incubation. Ever since, AWS and other contributors are contributing code and documentation into the project. One of the key features and differentiating feature from other frameworks is it supports about 7 different programming languages, so you can choose the one which you're most comfortable with, while the performance is retained because we use C++ code to write the backend and the operators. You can choose from R to Perl if you love regex expressions, or Scala, or Python, and we are working on a Java API. More to come. A few projects that are running around, that we are working on around MXNet is Onyx, TVM, toolkits like Gluon, CV, NLP, Keras. MXNet has a support for Keras and Model Server. So I'm going to talk about a few, and Thomas will introduce you to the others. The first thing is Model Server. How many of you have run a web server here? So it's very similar to a web server, but this works for models. So let's see how it looks to deploy a model and run a model server. The first thing is you need a model. These are your symbols, that is your graph of your neural network, and the weights associated with it, and the other assets. And then you have clients, like let's say you're trying to do fraud detection, on a website you are looking for payment transactions from mobile, desktop, or IoT. You want a server that can respond to, you send the transactions, a transaction pattern, and the server, for example, should send you whether it's a fraudulent transaction or not. You need a server of sort, similar to a Tomcat server, but this has a few more extra requirements, it should also support an endpoint that your clients can connect to. Model server, we often use this term in AWS. It's called, we say it does the undifferentiated heavy lifting of model serving. There are a few requirements for model serving. The first one being performance. It has to strike the right balance between latency and throughput. It has to make sure that it uses all the resources efficiently. And it also has to provide high availability. It shouldn't go offline. If it does, it should go gracefully. And then it has to support networking, like standard protocols over HTTP. The next one is if you have run microservices, you would know how important it is to have monitoring. For monitoring the request rate, error rate, or latency, or anything of that makes your operationalization easier. So this is one key important thing that model server should provide. Another one is model decoupling. The server itself shouldn't be concerned about what kind of models it's running, whether it's trying to find whether there is a cat in the image, or doing a sentiment analysis. It has to provide this nice decoupling from the server itself and the serving platform. There are many deep learning frameworks, PyTorch, TensorFlow, blah, 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 same, but they're different. The server should support it seamlessly support it without having to worry how the model was deployed or developed. And then you have it has to support multiple platforms. Mac, Linux, you know, CPUs, GPUs, all of this should be seamless. Most importantly, ease of use. It should be very easy to use the server, and you don't have to scratch your head middle of the night to run a server. To decouple the actual model from the serving framework itself, we came up with this notion of model archive, which contains all the artifacts that are needed to run model inference or prediction, which is you need a trained network, and you need model signature, that is, what is the input that your model takes and what output does it output. Then you need some custom code that can also do pre-processing and post-processing or any other auxiliary assets that's important for your serving. All of this together, we pack them up together and create a model archive. It's inspired by the Java archive jar file, and it makes it very easy once you create this. We provide a CLI as well. Then you can easily deploy it to different servers. Let's see a small demo here to see the ease of use. MXNet model server gives you a PyPI packet, so you can easily install it on Mac and Linux, or supports GPU and CPU out of the box. It's actually Apache licensed V2, so you can use it the way it seems fit for you. And here, this is what the URL that we are passing is that of the model archive that I talked about in the last slide. Here we say SqueezeNet is one of the type of model, and we pass the URL. The server will load up and start producing metrics for you. It's running on 8080 here. Yeah, let's try to run a sample inference or prediction on this model. It's running on 8080. So we'll just pick up a image and point it to that URL. First, we need to see if this server is healthy. It provides standard APIs for ping and whether it's healthy, otherwise it just fails. So for whatever reason in deep learning, kittens, cats are very popular. So we'll use the same here. Yeah, beautiful kitten, and Egyptian kitten or tabby kitten. Yeah, so we'll use that, and we can provide, we'll just do a curl call against the server that's running on a local port. So we'll just do a post and pass the file that we have. A model server supports file format, binary files like JPEG. It also supports JSON. You can run the text data, image data. Here we're showing this kitten image. Let's see what it comes up with. SqueezeNet is a very small model, about 5 MB. It's usually used for prototyping and sometimes in mobile. It gives 85% confidence. It says it's an Egyptian cat. Yeah. So it's as easy as that. Yeah. It's just a few lines of command to get your server running and have your model downloaded and set up. This is good. You can run it on local for prototyping and testing, but when you want to run it on under high load, you want something better. So what we suggest is to use containers or Docker images. It provides very light virtualization and isolation. It supports many platforms. So MMS comes with a Docker file that has all the prerequisites set up for you, and all you have to do is use it in the container cluster that you like Kubernetes or ECS or wherever. It comes with Nginx as a proxy that the backend server will talk to. The next project I want to talk about is Onyx. How many of you have heard of Onyx? Okay, for others, it stands for Open Neural Network Exchange. So if you think about deep learning, all your intellectual property is just in one file, one model. you know, you spend sometimes hours, days or weeks to develop this model and a lot of money to train the model and develop that model. And there are many frameworks. You can see that you can either keep converting between them or you can stay with one framework. You don't want to do that. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. So ONNX provides this nice inter-representation format for models. It has it supports many frameworks listed here like PyTorch, Caffe2. It has many platforms, even hardware. There are hardware vendors working with ONNX, the people behind ONNX, which is Amazon, Microsoft, and Facebook, to have their implementation based on ONNX. It's very simple. It's open source, obviously community driven, and the goal is very simple: just provide an intermediate representation, not to say how to implement that. That's up to the framework. They can implement the graph however they want. Let's see a quick example. Let's say so researchers build their models with PyTorch, and you know, if you want to use that model, it's very easy in MXNet. MXNet supports out of the box. You can just import a model, give it the model path, and here you can create a module, bind it, and set the parameters. Just run inference or fine-tune, or even you can save it as MXNet model. On the other side, MXNet also provides you APIs directly to save into ONNX format. So you can say always save right from the MXNet framework, export it, you provide the symbol, which is the network graph, and parameters are the weights. And you tell it the shape of the input and give it a file path. You can import in CNTK, Caffe2, PyTorch, all support out of the box. If you look deeper in ONNX, what it's made up of is protocol buffers. It's a binary compact format where you have, it's very high dense, and it has graphs and operators operators defined. On top of it, you just have APIs statically defined, and it supports serialization and deserialization across many platforms and also offers APIs in different programming languages. This project started in December of last month. Already it's gained a lot of traction. Three partners who work on those four frameworks already support out of the box, and there are other third-party developers who are very interested in providing support for Chainer, TensorFlow, and CoreML and Scikit, and more coming. This is another project that our community is working on, Keras MXNet. It's the core contributors are from AWS, and the GitHub repo is in AWS iLabs. So one of the reasons we worked on this is Keras gave you this very dead simple APIs, and their motto was very catchy also. It's deep learning for humans. And with TensorFlow, or whoever has dealt with TensorFlow, it was just to understand TensorFlow and set up, it took quite a bit of time. And so it became very popular, and it's the second most popular deep learning framework. And we wanted to give these users the great performance and scaling that MXNet provides. That's why we worked, and we added backend support for MXNet. You can see there, creating a network is very easy. It's very straightforward. It's like Python code. You create sequential, it's a type of network which is stacked, and then you add layers on top of it. Finally, you compile and train. It's very straightforward. To use MXNet, Keras MXNet, you pip install the flavor of MXNet you want. Whether if you are using CPU, then we recommend using the MKL version, or if you are using on a GPU, you can use this CUDA 92, and then you pip install Keras MXNet. Two lines of code will change it to MXNet backend. Here you set the backend as MXNet, and image data format channels first, where this is helpful because libraries like MKL provides very high performance for when the channels are in the first dimension. Channels here, I mean the three RGB channels in images. Looking at benchmark, you can see that the scalability of MXNet actually comes out here. You can see with when we ran this with synthetic data, that's data that's randomly generated on the fly. We didn't want to have the variation of the I/O involved in it, so we ran with synthetic data on a standard ResNet 50 model, which is very popular for benchmarking. And we saw when it was one GPU, we had a little bit of scale up, but as we added more GPUs, you can see with four, we had close to two speed up of two, and with eight, it jumped to four times. Similarly, we tested with ImageNet data. This is the data with which all these models are trained. We can see here, again, there's a huge speed up here. When running on eight GPUs, you can get a speed up of close to 3.4. That's like if your model took 7 days to train, it reduces to 2 days. 5 days, you can go to a beach somewhere. And here, we ran this for, obviously, we want to take this and a model and run it for inference. So we tested, ran some benchmarks using ResNet 50 again for batch inference. We saw even here the speed up was pretty significant, 1.7 when you have, that's a EC2 instance type, CPU only EC2 instance type, and we saw about 1.7, and here we saw for CPU C58X about 1.5. So to talk about Gluon and other toolkits, I'll hand over to Thomas.
Okay, thank you, Navin. So Navin told us about how you can serve your models with MXNet model server, how you're not stuck in a framework with the Onyx initiative that lets you take your trained model and put it with any framework, and finally that you can use the Keras API if you're more comfortable with, or if you have already existing code in Keras, and you can use the power and performance of MXNet by just using Keras MXNet. So what I'm going to talk to you now is about Gluon and the toolkit coming with it. I know if you remember on the first diagram that Navin showed, there was a Python was highlighted in green. Is even though we have like seven bindings, Python is the one we recommend for training because of the Gluon API. The Gluon API is an imperative API, and I'm going to explain what that means in a minute. And that makes Gluon very debuggable, flexible, and as scalable as a symbolic API. And that's something that usually you don't get in deep learning frameworks. So to explain what the symbolic and imperative paradigms are, you need to understand that before, when TensorFlow came out and Torch and MXNet, these frameworks, they were called symbolic because the paradigm was you define your network, you compile it, which means you first describe what your layers are, you compile it into an intermediate representation, and then that's usually executed in sort of like a backend engine. But then you lose all access to your data, to your intermediate representation. Because typically, once you know your entire graph, then you can do lots of graph optimization, memory optimization, these kind of things that are really useful to get performance. However, you lose the ability to put a breakpoint maybe at this node. With the imperative paradigm, it's defined by run. So you have a host language into which you first define your layers, but the execution flow is done through Python. So you're going to say, OK, take this data and then put it into the next layer and to the next layer and to the next layer. It's pretty fast, not as fast as if you had optimized your execution graph, but what that gives you is lets you put a breakpoint or conditional breakpoint right in the middle of your network. And then you can analyze the value of your features, the value of your gradients. You can really do a deep investigation of what's going on in your network. What's really cool and unique about Gluon is once you've done this debugging step, you can call hybridize. What hybridize does is going to, the next time you put data through your network, it's going to register the operation. And these operations are going to create the symbolic graph that's going to be cached and then executed through the symbolic engine. So Gluon gives you the flexibility of the imperative mode, like PyTorch or Chainer, and the performance of the base MXNet symbolic execution engine. So that's why we recommend people to do their training in Python, because in terms of productivity, it's a lot easier to work with. So Gluon also comes with two other main projects. First one is Gluon CV. It's a deep learning toolkit for computer vision. So computer vision has many different applications, but we have four main tasks. First one is image classification. So you have an image and you need a label. So that's pretty simple. That's also what Navin showed us before. We had a cat, a picture, and then we say picture of a cat. Next step is to do object detection. So you have a picture, and then you want to get a bounding box around certain objects with a given class. Another type of task that's slightly different is semantic segmentation or image segmentation. In that case, you want to look at each of your pixels of your image, and you want to associate that with a class. So here we have pixels of backgrounds, dog, and cat. Where you can start to see it could be a problem is when you have two dogs next to each other. So here you're just detecting a big dog blob, right? So the next step is instant segmentation, where you want to mix the object detection, so you have individual objects, with inside the bounding box, you want the precise boundary of your object. That's called instant segmentation. Well, Gluon CV provides you with pre-trained model for all of these tasks. And not only one pre-trained model per task, but most of the state-of-the-art results of all the different models are available with their training script so that you can do your own training on your own data if you want. And also that's, if you're an engineer, can be really good to just take it out of the box. If you're more like a researcher, you can use that for your baseline and comparison with your own work. Typically, for example, that the image segmentation models that we have, image classification, so we have more than 50 of them. And you can see here it's a trade-off between throughput that you can get, how fast you can put images through your network, how accurate your network is, and how much memory, so the size of the dot, how much memory they use on your GPU. So depending on your application, whether it's edge deployment or GPU inference, or whether it's CPU inference, or whether you really care about the quality of the predictions, well, you're going to make your choice of pre-trained model here. So that's very useful, at least it's been in my experience. To give you an example of what the code looks like, so the first line, I'm simply loading an image. And if you're familiar with deep learning, you will know that the pre-processing of the data is very important. You need to pre-process the data the same way that your training data was pre-processed. That would include normalizing your image, swapping the channels like Navin mentioned, dividing, putting in the right range, and using the right, for example, float 32, if your model is float 32. So Gluon CV provides a set of preset transforms, so you don't have to define them yourself. So here I load a picture, and I get this X, which is the tensor representation, an image, which is like the OpenCV representation for easy plotting. Then I define the compute context. Use this CTX equal MX.GPU. It says I want the execution to happen on my GPU. Next step, I load the model. So each of these model, pre-trained model, they have like a unique identifier that you can get in the docs. And I say to load the pre-trained version on my GPU. Next step is just run the execution of my image through this network. And what I get is a bunch of bounding box, associated classes, and confidence score. We also provide visualization utilities. And then the result of that, if you run it in Jupyter, is something like that. So in four lines, you've able to analyze an image. That's a goal from Diego Maradona from Argentina. And you know, this maybe 10 years ago, you'd ask someone, you know, how many months, how many people do you need to get this kind of output? It would be like years in a team of 10 people. And now it's like four lines. And you can deploy that with MXNet Model 7 and you have a web API. Yes?
It's kind of funny that you have to tell it to use the GPU specifically. It's kind of like
okay.
The software to hardware.
Yeah, so what, that's one of the really good features about MXNet is I don't need to change the code to run it on my CPU or on my GPU. Here, if I said context equal mx.cpu, it would load that into the RAM and not into the memory of my GPU and execute it the same. I expect it would be a lot slower. So it's really, the compute context is really abstracted from the user, and you just define your network in a compute agnostic way. Answer your question? Cool, so that was for the computer vision type of tasks. We also have a natural language processing toolkit, so that's for all the tasks related around the text. So for example, sentiment analysis, language generation, machine translation, this kind of thing, the text classification. So you can also go to the website, a dedicated website and dedicated PyPI package. And I'm just going to list a few of the features. So we have 300 pre-trained word embeddings and extremely useful for different NLP tasks, and I'll speak about it in the next slide. We have five language model. The language model, I have another slide about it, but basically it's the ability to predict next words given a certain amount of a partial sentence. Translation, we all know what translation is, but we have the two latest state-of-the-art results that have been published, see that the Google neural machine translation paper and the attention is all you need paper, or transformer model. And also you have a bunch of different tools and utilities that are super useful when you do NLP. A lot of like tokenization, pipeline, normalization, all kind of put together for deep learning and NLP. And obviously we have also the tutorials that come with that, so to let you do your like examples like sentiment analysis so you can reproduce and use the models we have. So word embedding. Word embedding, just to give you an idea of what it is, when you do NLP, you work with text, right? Text, it's made of tokens, characters, words. Let's say you work at the word level. And then suddenly, if you pass like a book, you're going to end up with a vocabulary of like 30,000, 50,000 different words. Then to represent a single word, you need to use like a one-hot encoding scheme, for example. So that's like extremely sparse data, and when you need to represent full sentences, become gigantic. And also it brings you no information about the structure of that data. So the idea is to use, instead of using one-hot encoding, is to use a lot smaller vectors. We use float values. And what you can do is you can train these float values to be close to each other for words that are related, so that are used in the same context. So that's the glove embedding or the fast text embeddings are called. Typically, you see, for example, car and van are quite similar. They can be used in similar contexts. So let's say you're training a text classification algorithm. You have some examples where you want to classify whether a sentence is about transportation. Well, if you have some data about the word car and the word van that are similar, you pass that through your network, they're going to be treated in a similar way. And then you don't need to have as many example sentences that contain, you know, the word car and the word van. They're going to share this information, and they're going to make your model learn more general features. So that's called like transfer learning. You can pre-train on gigantic corpus these word embeddings, and then use them in different applications. Give you an idea of what I'm talking about. Just imagine if you're using only two coordinates, or you're projecting the representation onto a 2D space. Then you're going to have, for example, officer, war together. You have like FIFA team goal together. So words that are appearing in a similar semantic context are going to be clustered together. So they're going to share information, and then your model is going to learn more generic solutions. So we have 300 of them available, trained with a variety of ways. So you have different subtleties on how you can train these word embeddings, and also the variety of data sets. We also make the data set available directly through the toolkit. So that's pretty cool. For language modeling, for example, let's say you train to predict the next word in this sentence, the winner of the FIFA 2018 FIFA World Cup is? Yeah. India? I don't know. That's my language model. I think. What? Russia. Just a quick reminder, if you had forgotten, France won the World Cup. To show you an example of ENCODE, how that would work. So you would load this model, similarly how we loaded the computer vision model. We want the pre-trained version of the standard LSTM language model trained on the Wikitext data set. Then we have a sentence. So this movie is considered the. We tokenize that, and we get from the vocab. The vocab is like indexable, returns us all the index of the words. And then we pass that through our language model. The language model is going to give back us a bunch of predictions. This prediction, you can see that as a probability distribution over your vocabulary. So each word gets a probability. And then if we look at the top 20 predictions, so this movie is considered the, and you see a bunch of superlatives, right? The greatest, the highest, the worst, the final. So it's probably been trained on movie reviews, and that's what it predicts the next word to be. What's interesting is you can do that in an autoregressive way, where you can sample from these predictions and then insert that and then predict the next word and so on and so forth. So you can generate text like that. And I just played with it, and I generated this movie is considered the greatest threat to the public. Dot. And then,
is Trump in it?
Sorry? Yeah. So that was for the toolkit. So it's really a lot of resources. If you are new to deep learning, or you just heard of it, or you're curious about it, it's a really good way to check them out. And like I said, these code examples, they are like four lines, five lines. So you can really play around. I wanted to show what MXNet is. It took me like 1 hour to build a demo with OpenCV, where you just grab a frame from the webcam and do object detection and just show that. So it's really easy. It's fun. So really encourage you to check them out. The next thing I want to talk about is more when you want to do training. When you want to train your own model, you need to really get to understand what's going on, understand your metrics, see how fast your model is training, how well it's training. And MXBoard, it's a plugin to TensorBoard, which has been built by the TensorFlow folks. And you can plug images, graphs, lots of different things that really help you understand your model. Give you an example. I did a tutorial on optimizing the performance of MXNet. And here I plotted the accuracy versus the time, right? So I can see each of the performance improvement I did, I can reach the same accuracy, but a lot faster. And here that the samples per second that I went through my network. So when you're iteratively developing and testing different assumptions, it's very important to keep track of what you're doing so that you can really compare and make an informed decision on what the best architecture. Because sometimes you might reach a certain accuracy in less iteration, but each iteration is longer. So it can be really interesting to have these comparisons. So once you have your model trained, you want to deploy it. We integrate with a lot of different deep learning acceleration libraries, including CUDA and cuDNN, which are built by NVIDIA for NVIDIA GPUs. So it makes your deep learning faster on GPU. TensorRT, that's built by NVIDIA. What it does is once you have your trained model, your graph, it's going to look at your graph, look where it can fuse operators, or combine operators, and is going to redraw your graph and execute that in TensorRT. So that's only for inference, but it can really speed inference up to 3 or 4 times. Intel has come up with MKL, MKL-DNN, which are linear algebra libraries specifically made for deep neural networks, and that makes use of all the cores of your CPU. So for example, on the C5 instances Navin mentioned, you can versus the non-MKL-DNN version, it's 32 times faster because it's using your 32 cores. And there is this version available through the what we call like MXNet flavors. So if you look at PyPy comments here, you can get the CUDA version, the MKL version, or the TensorRT version. So it's very easy to test for yourself. The last project I want to talk about is TVM. TVM, it's still a bit inspired by, it's a bit similar to TensorRT. It's called a deep learning compiler. So it takes your trained model, analyze a graph, do some graph optimization, then look at the actual tensor operation, and then compile that to machine code for different hardware platforms. So you can just compile it for like CPU, for ARM, for CUDA, for JavaScript, for your own chip that you created and you defined. So it's kind of this intermediate representation. I mean, it kind of is this compiler that can compile to different platforms. And the one of the really cool features is the artifact is super small. Because when you use MXNet to do inference, you pack up the entire library. So it has all the operators that you might not be using. TVM will compile only what's necessary. It's like a machine code that you can execute. And so for like edge deployments, it's really interesting to look at. So all these different projects we talked about that touch on the training, the inference, or domain specific like GluonCV, Gluon NLP, they wouldn't exist without the community. So MXNet is not only developed by Amazon, it's developed by a lot of contributors, some from academia, some from the industry, some they work in their own time. To keep track of what's going on with MXNet, I encourage you to check the Medium publication. We have a lot of blog posts. Some are more like on the application side, some more on the specific library side, or some companies just sharing their experience using MXNet or why they picked MXNet over the other frameworks. We have a YouTube channel. You might see some of us there. We have tutorials and recorded talks that you can visualize there. Twitter handle, you know how Twitter works, and Reddit, feel free to contribute to the community. The code is on GitHub. It has more than 15,000 stars now. It's very easy for you to contribute. Just fork it, look at the open issues. We have more than 800 of them, so if we can get some help to close some down, that would be good. We'd be super happy to have more contributors, and we have a new contributor here, just opened his first pull request today, so. So that's really cool, and we hope to see more of you. For the questions, GitHub is more on the technical side, right? Like if you have you think you have a bug, open an issue on GitHub. If you don't know how to do something with MXNet, or you're not sure if it's a bug or more, you think it's a problem with the code that you've written, I encourage you to check the Discuss forum, or it's discuss.mxnet.io. It's fairly active. We have like 5 to 10 questions a day, and we try to answer them within a day or two. You can see it's me who just answered like this week. And obviously, as the Apache way, the mailing lists are here, the dev mailing list and the user mailing list. Just subscribe, follow the discussion, feel free to participate, give your opinion, share your feedback. It's really appreciated. And just to show you a bit the momentum we've gotten with MXNet, we have Samsung using MXNet, Intel, SK Telecom, a lot of different companies all over the world, like TuSimple is a self-driving car company in China. It's really big. They're using MXNet. And we have a lot more that we don't have here because they don't want public references. But for example, Chick-fil-A, they use MXNet to
keep
their fries fresh. So they use like the object detector I showed you. They basically make sure the fries are here, and then they look how long they stay, and if it's too long, then they get an alarm. So that's pretty cool.
Actually, our Egyptian cats.
Yeah. Yeah. So, thank you very much. We have time for a few questions. So, yes.
I'm just curious about the Onyx initiative.
Yeah.
Have you run into any issues with respect from one model system to the other?
Yes. Yeah, so I'll give you an example. Usually when people ask me about that, that's problem is Onyx define what we call opspec, so it defines what operator should do. And for example, it says that the convolution operator should support asymmetric padding. In MXNet, the convolution operator does not support asymmetric padding. Padding is always symmetric on each side, whether the width or the height. So to do that, what we do is we take a Onyx convolution, transform it into a padding and then a convolution with no padding, because our padding operator supports asymmetric padding. So that would be one thing where you go from one operator to two operators. And then if you go back to Onyx, you'd get two operators where we don't do fusion. So that's the kind of thing where if you go from one framework to another and so on and so forth, you can end up maybe with some degraded performance. Not every framework supports the same version of the op specification. So we are, I think, the leading with, like, we support the latest versions. But for example, Cafe is, like, I think, one or two versions behind. So some things to be aware. but it's really a cool initiative, and people are working hard to converge to allow, like, easy transfer from one framework to another. There's another question. Yes?
I have a question. I'm not very familiar with machine learning, so This is common knowledge to me. But I feel that once you train your data set, or once you finish training your model and use it, I feel like it's already wrong. I don't know why I feel that, but because things always change.
Yes.
So we live in a dynamic world. So You always use these examples. We trained our set and now we're using it. I feel like, okay, great, we're using wrong data. We're playing around with wrong data.
Oh, that's very common. It's true, and it actually happens. That's correct. So that's like the coverage shift. Like when you, for example, I'll give you an example happened to me. I built a text classification model for classifying news among like 25 categories. So worked really, really well. And then journalists came up with a 26th category, and then the model, well, we never classify it like that because you've never seen it. So how do you handle these cases, right? So that's typically things that happen all the time. The answer is retraining. Like if you retrain on your data as it comes, you can have some sampling trick when you can use more recent, or you can have like a specific weights that, for example, like a decaying rate, where your old example have less weight and your more recent examples have more weight, then you can fight this shift in your data. But otherwise, yes, retraining. Depends. It can be every week. Depends on how fast your data shifts, and depends on your application as well.
If you're doing weather, traffic patterns in a city, for example, well, it's constantly changing. So you have to constantly retrain, every hour?
It depends exactly what you want to do, how you frame your problem, right? Like if you say, for example, right? If you try to predict the patterns and indeed there is an accident, then it's going to be wrong, right? But if you predict how does the traffic flows in case of accidents, then it's fine because the accident is going to happen and your model will have that incorporated. So sometimes when you know how your data shifts, is going to be how you frame your problem to be more less sensitive to change. Cool. Another question?
Okay, let's thank our speakers one more time.
Thank you.
Thank you.